Mr. Brian Hipperson, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Hipperson?
Yeah, I was born in Norwich, September the 17th, 1931.
And could you tell us a bit about your family, of your background in Norwich?
Yeah, I was born not far from here, actually. But I was the youngest of six children. My father was a woodworker machinist locally, worked regularly. Just an ordinary family, living in an ordinary sort of way as we all did.
Did the family have it tough for money with just one income?
We all had it a bit tough for money. Nobody had much money to throw away. But my father did have regular employment. He worked all his work life without any unemployment, so we were very fortunate that way. We didn't have a lot of money even so, but it was always money coming into the house. And of course, I was the youngest of six, so the time I was born, my oldest brother was going to work. So we didn't have it. We weren't well off by any means, but at the same time, where it was always full down the table and, you know, we weren't having a bad life.
What about your education? Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, just an ordinary elementary education, really.
Which school did you go to?
I went to a school, Carmen Road School, which is an infant school. I went to the primary school, which was next door, which is now a middle school. And I went to Avenue Road Senior School till I was 14. And I left school, and I was apprenticed to a plumber. So
what year did you leave?
I left school in the Christmas after the war finished.
Right. Can I just ask you, before we go to that, what effects did the war have on you? I know you were only a child, you'd be sort of...
When the war was declared, that was obviously a big effect on me. A big effect, I don't know. I think I was born at a time, I was about eight when the war started, as we just said, and I was brought up. The years of my childhood I remember were war years. So there was always soldiers about, and I remember the Blitz in Norwich and
bombing. Was it much bombing you were aware of?
Yes, very, very much so. Later on, the Germans targeted cathedral cities and Norwich Blitz fairly badly. And I remember that very, very, very vividly.
Tell us about it. Well, I
can remember the air raid sirens used to go. We had the air raid shelter in the back garden. And we always stayed in bed till the crash went. There used to be the air raid warning and then the crash warning when the German planes were getting nearer. And my mother and father would come and get us out. It's when the crash went, and we remember this particular night we just got in the shelter, and that was like all hell broke loose. There was planes and bombs dropping everywhere. A couple of doors away, houses were blitzed and blown down. My father, who had been in the First World War, had been a bit clever, I think, when we issued our Anderson shelter. And he put it very deep in the ground and made a proper entrance. So a bit deeper than most, which I think probably saved our lives, because after that particular raid, after the all clear had gone, there was all the rubble from the house next door but one all land on the top of our air raid shelter and things like that, you know. And I remember all very vividly, and the soldiers being here. And
what was it like in the Anderson shelter? Can you give us an idea?
My father, being in a woodworking trade, he made some bunks which he put in. You were issued in a shelter, depending on the size of your family, it was the size of the shelter. And there was, my eldest brother was married, but when the war started, but the others were, I was five children at home. But by the time Blitz came, there was two of my brothers were in the services and they were away. My eldest sister was on munitions. She was away, so we had more plenty of room in the air raid shelter, and the old man, he'd made these bunk beds, and that was very damp and that sort of thing, you know, but at least we could lay down in the shelter and pull a blanket over you, you know.
So you'd get off to sleep, would you?
No, you couldn't. So, well, you never slept. I mean, we would, sometimes we did, I mean, because after that bad night, we had two or three, the Germans had two or three goals at Norwich, and we did actually sleep down the shelter for a few weeks to all quieten down a bit. We'd sleep down there at night. It all was very damp and not a very nice place, that was, you know, but at least they were safe. And yeah, that was while I was at school.
You said there were a lot of shot soldiers about the town. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, it was soldiers training in areas now which are all built up. We used to go and watch this soldiers training and all sorts of bayonet training and running about and all this, that and the other. And they were billeted on local people around here too. There was also a lot of airfields in this area too, and we used to see the planes going over continuously, the American planes and the British planes. The Americans going over during the day and the British planes going over in the evening, you know, going out to Germany and that. And of course, occasionally there'd be a plane brought down. And I remember one occasion, we had a German plane flew in with them. It was a load of Americans and started shooting them up and, you know, all them sort of things. Saw them all the time, and you know, you were brought up where there was a little ammunition dumps about here, and as kids we weren't particularly good, and you know, you used to raid the things and all sorts of things really. But
what would you take from the ammunition dumps, though? I mean,
well, sort of bullets and break them open and take the cordite out and load it up and all sorts of things. But they're cool. Frightening it to death when you think about it. But
did you take much or just a
nah? It wouldn't take much, very little really, hardly anything. But you know, I see some weird and wonderful things about. But we were brought up with this environment, as I said, of soldiers about, and in a wartime environment.
What about rationing, food rationing? Did that affect you greatly?
Yeah, my mother used to regulate the food we had. I always remember we all had a jar. She used to work out how much sugar we could have, and you had a jar with your name on it, and that was your sugar, and if you had to last you the week, and that was up to you how much you put in on your food or in your tea, and if you used it up, that's your fault. You didn't get any more. You know, that was yours for the week and things like that. And she was pretty good.
Did you miss sweets, or were you not really aware? I mean,
yeah, I was aware of it, because when the sweet ration came along, I can't remember whether that was monthly or weekly, monthly, I think. You got your ration card, and you used to shoot off down the sweet shop and get some sweets, you know. Yeah, you missed them, certainly you missed them, but you never really felt as you was deprived of anything, you know. It was all part of life, and everybody was the same, wasn't it?
What about clothes, Rashid? Did that bother you, or did you just have the hand-me-downs?
No, I didn't have a handy-downs, because there was a lot of several years between my brothers and myself. There was two girls between them, so I never really had hand-me-downs. as a kid, well, you know, I mean, clothes for us kids were, as I said, in the first place, we didn't have a lot of money, and that wouldn't be unusual for boys to go to school, wear patches on the back, soles of trousers, you know what I mean. We weren't brought up in a particularly cool conscious society as people are today. When I think of kids today with their designer labels and all this, that and the other, when we were, I mean, you never thought anything about it, you know, you had a pair of trousers and you wore them, you know, and that was it. And of course, when we, it was different when we were later, but then again, clothes were getting easier to get by the time I was of an age when I suddenly thought, well, I need a, you know, became more clothes conscious.
Now, what about the progress of the war? I mean, did you follow it closely, especially
with
your brothers? You
know? Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, the father always listened to the news on the radio and you read the paper and you were always conscious of it, I mean, at school and everywhere else. There were people, I mean, I remember one night we had some bombing and, you know, at school the next morning and, you know, one of the boys in our class had been killed the night before, you know, things like that. So you're always conscious of it. And then your mother and father talking about somebody up the street whose son had been killed. And, you know, I mean, that was, you were always conscious of it. And you always followed the war. You knew exactly what was going on.
Did you particularly watch where your brothers were? Did you know where your brothers
were? Well, you didn't always know where they were. They didn't tell you, did they? You know, my oldest brother, he was in Europe, you know, and my other brother was in the Middle East, you know. My oldest brother was in the RAF regiment, and my other brother was in the RAF, and you know it. You know, so you're always conscious of it. We always watched it and that sort of thing.
Now, what about VJ Day? Do you remember that?
I remember VE Day very well. Yeah, I remember it being war in Europe had finished. And actually, one of my brothers, it was one who was in Europe, came home on leave, and he married a girl who he'd met in a Welsh girl he'd met in a service, and he'd come home from Germany, wherever he was, and for a leave, and she'd managed to get leave from wherever she was stationed, and they got married at the City Hall, and that was VA Day, and I remember that. And then I remember all the celebrations, and we lit a big bonfire out in the road, and things like that, and everybody screaming and shouting, and you know, enjoying themselves, and I remember that very well. I was 13, nearly 14 then. And then I remember VJ Day. Strangely enough, I was in the Scouts, and we were camping at Woodbastwick. Went for a week's camp at Woodbastwick, and about 10 hours. And I remember somebody coming out. We were in a field in front of Woodbastwick Hall, and I remember somebody coming out from the hall and telling us the war was over. So we went home for a couple of days and come back to camp. And I remember that quite well. Yeah.
Now, what about your work?
I left school. I left school at Christmas after the war finished, and I went to work as an apprentice plumber. I was apprenticed to plumbing. Jobs were quite easy to get then, actually, for young boys, you know. And I did a 5-year apprenticeship in plumbing.
So I
went back to tech then, sort of, you know, carried on my education really, you know, because you have to go to night school. At first, that was 3 nights a week. The first couple of years, and then they changed the system with a day release and one night. 3 nights a week were a bit hard in the winter. when you'd been out on a building site all day, the hardest bit was keeping awake when you got warm in the classroom. But anyway, yeah, so I did my 5-year apprenticeship.
That would be some 45, late 45 to about 51?
Well, I actually finished my apprenticeship at Christmas when I was 19. I had a deferment, because apprentices got deferment. I had a deferment until I was 21. I used to get, if you were an apprentice, you should get a deferment at 21. But then, in just after Christmas, well, I suppose about February time, 51, I got this letter saying that they noticed that my apprenticeship was finished. So they cancelled the deferment. And so I had to go in. And I went in the March of 51, and I called up my national service.
Now, what was the procedure that they took you through? I mean, you know, from when you first called up, you know, the medical and all the rest of it.
Yeah, well, you did the medical when I was 18. You had to register when you was 18. Then you had a medical examination down St George's somewhere. And I remember going in there and having this medical examination, this little panel of retired doctors. And, you know, if you walk across the room, you're A1 sort of thing, you know. And we did that. So when they called me up, I'd had my medical and everything. And, of course...
Had you wanted to go to the army, or were you more interested
in the army? I wanted to go in the army, but I expected, especially as I'd done the apprenticeship, I thought I would get, because you see, let me deviate here a bit, that while I was working, most of my apprenticeship, I worked with men who'd just come out of the army, who'd just been, you know, just come out of the army, they'd done their, you know, wartime service, and went in sort of 21 or 2 and they were coming out. And of course I was brought up in this environment that you expected to go in the army when you got a certain age. That was the way life was, you see. I mean, this is the thing, that was the way it was part of growing up. And all the time I was an apprentice, the men would say, oh, wait till they get you in there, they'll cut your hair and they'll do this and they'll do that. And I grew up, and of course they used to give me advice, you see, and they say, well, go in one of the corps, you know, don't go in the blooming infantry. And, but you'll be all right because you've been an apprentice, you see. So, of course, I thought I was going to go in the Remy or the Royal Engineers or something like that. But I got my corn up papers and go in the Royal Norfolks. And they all laughed and said, here, he's in the poor bleeding infantry, you know, the PBI. And, sure, they'll make you work. And so I was a bit surprised, but I did find out later why we were all put, or everybody at that time who'd had a deferment of any sort went into the infantry, and why they cancelled my deferment and reduced it to, so I had to go in instead of waiting until I was 21, I had to go in then. Because my opinion is I lost most of the Gloucester battalion. They were short on strength in the infantry. Now, they couldn't send national service boys to Korea until they were 19. And obviously, the thing to do was they had to build up the reserves. So the thing was to call us up, who, you know, it was sort of paddling war between apprenticeship and 21, because the day I was called up, I went to Bury St Edmunds where I did my initial 6 weeks training.
You didn't do it at Britannia Barracks?
No, I went to Bury St Edmunds, and when we got, well, there's a truck meeting on the station, we got off a truck and
this would be March 51?
This would be March 51.
Sorry, I interrupted
that. No, it's okay. And we got off a truck, which brought us from the station up to Blenheim Camp at Bury St Edmunds. And the first thing we were told were we were going to Korea. And we were all people who'd been apprentices and that sort of thing, and people who'd had deferments. So we were all 19 plus. So later on I thought, well, I know where that is. But so basically that was what we what happened.
How did they sort of take you into the army? You'd been warned what it would be like, you know, your reception.
Yeah, you knew
how
what
did they take you in?
That shook me a bit, really. I mean, I'd been told, because I, you know, working with these folks, and they were just out, and they'll do this, that, and the other. But the discipline, I think, was stricter. I found it quite difficult at first. I'd spent 5 years being taught to think for myself. So you sort your problems out. You at work, you know, to think for myself and do things for myself. And of course, when you get in the army, first thing they do is teach you, you don't think for yourself. You do as you're told, and that's it. And I found that was one of the difficult things I found in the army to adjust to, was somebody to tell me to clean my shoes. I knew my bloody shoes needed clean, you know. Silly little basic things, because I'd been taught to think things out, and if I had a problem at work, you've got to be the tradesman, you're the one who's got to sort it out, you know, it's up to you, and you think, you know, and you're taught, as an apprentice, you were taught to think for yourself and sort problems out. And all of a sudden, you mustn't think for yourself at all. If you started thinking for yourself, you was in trouble. The thing to do was, if you were one of these people who could just roll along and do whatever you were told without even thinking about it, you got on fine. And that was one of the hard bits I found to adjust to.
Did they cut all your hair off?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they cut it all off.
Was it long anyway? I mean,
reasonably, yeah. And not on today's standards, but on those standards, that was quite long. But I had a haircut before I went. I had the old short bags and sides. But they still cut it off, and I got my own back. I had a crew cut. And I kept a crew cut all the time I was in the army, really. And it never grew on, I think, again.
what about Kitty now? What do you remember of Kitty now?
Oh, yeah, I remember going in the stores and they throwing all the stuff at you, you know. And, yeah.
What did they give you?
Well, he gave us a couple of tunics, a couple of battle dresses and trousers, and a couple of pairs of boots, and what else was there? There was socks, vests, pants, such as they were. Pardon me. What else they give us? Towels, I think. They did a bit of tailoring on some of the clothes. You know, some denims to wear, you know, battle, you know, for work and stuff. Yeah, sort of a kit bag full anyway. Plenty of all new boots already. Had to all were built in wrinkles, so you had to straighten them out. And I remember 6 weeks basic training.
Well, tell me about first the room. What was your barrack room like?
The barrack room was a hut.
Oh, they were huts, were
they? Yeah, they were a hutted camp.
What was it like?
Well, it's just like an ordinary square army hut. A tortoise stove in the middle with no coke. We used to go and nick the coke from outside the cook house. I mean, that was March. That was damn cold in there. Wasn't we were supposed to get it from, but we used to go, there's a big heap out the back of the cook house, and when it got dark, we used to go over there and get some coke. But that was basically just a wooden hut, where you had your bed and a couple of shelves above your bed, and that was about it.
If we look at the training through, say, a typical day, we'll pick most things up, you know. I know you can't, it'd be unlikely if you could remember what day, but what about what time would the day kick off?
I can't remember, revalue at that camp, and I suppose that was 6:30, I suppose. 6:30 revalue, you're then washed, shaved, you know, ran over to the ablution block and washed and shaved, got dressed, went to breakfast.
Now, what about Arby food? Let's pick that up.
That weren't bad, not there. That weren't bad at all. No, it weren't bad. I mean, I was only a 19-year-old boy, and you can always eat more at 19. But that weren't bad. The Army food weren't too bad at Barry St. Edmunds when I went there. And
Was it the sort of thing you were used to? I mean, what would you eat for breakfast and lunch or dinner, whatever you call it?
Well, we'd have Sarah's, and they'd be eggs and things for breakfast, and yeah, that weren't bad. We, you know, obviously plenty of tea, and had, you know, obviously had cold toast. And then lunch times, well, we'd have normal sort of lunches, you know. It's hard to remember now. We'd have but we had it hot tea as well. We had a dinner at lunchtime and then a hot tea at night, you know.
But it was good, you know.
Yeah, that was good, wholesome food.
And plenty of it.
And a reasonable amount of it, enough. A reasonable amount of food. As I said, at that age, what all you found hard was the evenings, you could always, felt if you wanted more, eat and during the evening. And of course, you'd go to Nappy, but we didn't have any money, did we? And that was my biggest gripe, was the National Service pay. As a National Serviceman, your pay was about half of that, as if you signed on only for 3 years. You went on the regular pay, which would give you, my pay is about 26 shillings a week. If I was a regular, it was 50 shillings a week. And you only had to sign on for another year. And a lot of boys fell for that and they took that. But I was determined just to do my 2 years. And that was my biggest gripe, was the pay. Because I think I'd done 5 years apprenticeship, starting off on, you know, working for pittance. I had about 2 months of what they called an improver's pay, because you never got full pay till you were 21. Although you were doing the work, you only got it, but that was all part of the scheme, wasn't it? But on a reasonable wage, I had about 2 months of that, and I go back in the army on 26 shillings a week, and then there's less barrack room damages, etc., etc., and you drew about a quid. So you were back skint again,